This is Resonance 104.4 FM. Flipping marvellous. How are you? Tis I, Nick Hennigan. Nicholas of Hennigan, coming at you with another slice of Literary London. Also, of course, available on bohemianbritain.com. How have you been? It's just me and you and a bit of a celebration. Well, a couple of big celebrations. The Irish writer Seamus Heaney, I've always loved. And I was, when he passed away a little while ago, I was flattered and honoured to be asked to write an obituary for him for a London newspaper, which I think was the Evening Standard, but I can't quite remember. That's how flattered I was. yes, Seamus Heaney, he's celebrating a birthday this week. But also, of course, well, I say, of course, you may not know, we also are celebrating the birth of William Wordsworth. War in 1770, in fact, 7th of April, 1770. William Wordsworth, one of the founders of English Romanticism, and possibly one of its more sort of, I don't know, central figures, and certainly an important intellect. He's remembered perhaps as a poet of spiritual speculation, and a poet concerned with the human relationship to nature. Also, he was a fierce advocate, which is kind of one of the reasons why I really love him, of using the vocabulary and the speech patterns of what was known then as common people in poetry. Being a common person myself, I appreciate it. He was the son of John and Anne Cookson Wordsworth, excuse me, born in Cockermouth in Cumberland, in the Lake District of England, which is a very beautiful place if you've never been there. Of course, an area that would eventually become very closely associated with William Wordsworth for over two centuries after he passed away. He began writing poetry as a young boy in grammar school. Before graduating from college, he went on a walking tour of Europe, which is kind of what they did in those days, I think. Yes. But it deepened his love for nature and his sympathy for the common man. Both major themes in his poetry. He's probably best known for lyrical ballads, co-written with Samuel Taylor Coleridge, and The Prelude, a romantic epic poem, chronicling the, quote, growth of a poet's mind. But of course, he's probably best known for this.
I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils. Beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze, continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could not but be gay in such a jocund company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft, when on my couch I lie in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills, and dances with the daffodils.
Earth has not anything to show more fair. Dull would he be of soul who could pass by a sight so touching in its majesty. The city now doth like a garment wear the beauty of the morning. Silent, bare, ships, towers, domes, theatres, and temples lie open unto the fields and to the sky, all bright and glittering in the smokeless air. Never did sun more beautifully steep in his first splendor valley, rock, or hill. Ne'er saw I, never felt a calm so deep. The river glideth at his own sweet will. Dear God, the very houses seem asleep, and all that mighty heart is lying still.
A couple of classics there by William Wordsworth, you heard upon Westminster Bridge. And before that, of course, I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud. Yes, William Wordsworth. In 1843, William Wordsworth was voted Poet Laureate, or named, I should say, Poet Laureate of England. And I love some of his quotes, some of his famous quotes. William Wordsworth said, "Fill your paper with the breathings of your heart." That's kind of nice, isn't it? What else did I like? Oh, yes, he wrote, the best portion of a good man's life, his little, nameless, unremembered acts of kindness and love. Isn't that nice? Huh? And this is an absolute classic if you are a writer. This is coming from William Wordsworth, so you know it's right. William Wordsworth said, "To begin, begin." There's a great quote, and I can't remember who said it. Said, the worst words I've ever written are better than the best words I've never written, which is absolutely spot on. So we're celebrating now William Wordsworth, Britain's Poet Laureate, say from 1843 until he passed away in 1850, the major English romantic poet who helped launch the Romantic Age in English literature. We're also celebrating another giant, this time from Ireland, and as I mentioned at the start, someone who I feel slightly closer to, and that is Seamus Heaney, who was born on the 13th of April in 1939. He passed away at the end of August, the 30th of August in 2013. Some of his quotes are fantastic as well. He says, this is when I quite like it. He said, "I can't think of a case where poems change the world, but what they do is change people's understanding of what's going on in the world." I'll have a few more quotes from Seamus Heaney in a little while, but let's hear some of his work first. You're listening to Resonance at 104.4 FM. I'm Nick Hennigan. This is Literary London, of course, your weekly look at, you know, literary stuff and London stuff. And we're also on bohemianbritain.com. Don't forget, if you've got anything happening writerly, or, you know, anything really to do with literature or writing, or you've written your own book, or you've got your own poems, or you want them read out, then do get in touch. You can get me radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk, radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk, or I've now got my own email. Yeah, Nick, N-I-C-K, @bohemianbritain.com. A bit more difficult to spell, isn't it? But Nick, N-I-C-K, @bohemianbritain.com. One word, .com, and I'd love to hear from you. Also, I'd love to hear from you if you're going to go to the Edinburgh Festival this year. Oh, crikey, for the last few years I've been going, no, I can't go again, and I won't bang on about it here, but you'll know if you're an artist or a theatre maker. Edinburgh is the biggest open arts festival in the world, and it's probably one of the most expensive for accommodation in August. I did have a quote last year for three actors in a flat in Edinburgh city centre. £10,500. Yes. So I've decided I'm not taking up any actors. I'm going to do the London Literary Pub Crawl in Edinburgh. Now, it's a long way to go, isn't it, from London to Edinburgh? So I've decided we're going to change it. So it's going to be, I literally only decided this yesterday. We're going to be at the Pleasance, what's it called? The Mound, I think. No, is it? No, not the Pleasance Courtyard, but the other one in the main square. I'll check it all out. I mean, the ink's not dry on the contract yet. But yes, and I'm going to do it myself. Why not? I wrote the London Literary Pub Crawl in 2012 for the Olympics. We were a bit late for the Olympics and they wouldn't put them off for us. But it's been going ever since. It actually goes out every Saturday in Soho and Fitzrovia in central London. And I'm going to do an Edinburgh version, which is going to be fairly straightforward because I do love Edinburgh. If you've never been to Edinburgh, it is a beautiful city. Scotland's a wonderful country and it's got some great writers and great literary stories. Oh, and by the way, yes, a few pretty good pubs. Yep. I'm talking about you, Brass Monkey. Oh, yeah. I actually got a discount card at that particular pub. on Drummond Street in Edinburgh, which we'll probably end up visiting. Or I might just pop in there on the way to do the tour. Anyway, more about that later. And if you are going to the Edinburgh Festival this year, the Edinburgh Fringe, it's running from, I think, what is it, 2nd till the 26th of August. This is 2024 when I'm doing this. Then drop me a line. Do get in touch, because it'd be great to... meet up or get together. And don't forget, if you've got an event happening either in London or at the Edinburgh Festival or anywhere that might be of interest, again, drop me an email, nick@mavericktheatre.co.uk, nick@mavericktheatre.co.uk, radio@mavericktheatre, that'll do, or nick@bohemianbritain.com, nick@bohemianbritain.com. Be great to hear from you. Yeah. So, more from Seamus Heaney. And as I say, I was quite honoured to be asked to write an obituary for Seamus Heaney when he passed away in August 2013. And I suppose I've got to start with this, probably his most famous poem. This is gorgeous.
Digging. Between my finger and my thumb, the squat pen rests, snug as a gun. Under my window, a clean rasping sound when the spade sinks into gravelly ground. My father digging. I look down till his straining rump among the flower beds bends low, comes up 20 years away, stooping in rhythm through potato drills where he was digging. The coarse boot nestled on the lug. The shaft against the inside knee was levered firmly. He rooted out tall tops, buried the bright edge deep to scatter new potatoes that we picked, loving their cool hardness in our hands. By God, the old man could handle a spade, just like his old man. My grandfather cut more turf in a day than any other man on Toner's Bog. Once I carried him milk in a bottle, corked sloppily with paper. He straightened up to drink it, then fell to right away, nicking and slicing neatly, heaving sods over his shoulder, going down and down for the good turf, digging. The cold smell of potato mould, the squelch and slap of soggy peat, the curt cuts of an edge through living roots awaken in my head. But I've no spade to follow men like them. Between my finger and my thumb, the squat pen rests. I'll dig with it.
That kind of sums up a lot, doesn't it? Certainly does for me anyway. Seamus Heaney and digging. And here he is again with a Loch Ness sequence.
A Loch Ness sequence. Up the shore. The loch will claim a victim every year. It has virtue that hardens wood to stone. There is a town sunk beneath its water. It is the scar left by the Isle of Man. A tomb bridge where it sluices towards the sea. They've set new gates and tanks against the flow. From time to time they break the eel's journey and lift 500 stone in one go. But up the shore in Antrim and Tyrone, there is a sense of fair play in the game. The fishermen confront them one by one and sail miles out and never learn to swim. We'll be the quicker going down, they say. And when you argue there are no storms here, that 1 hour floating's sure to land them safely, the loch will claim a victim every year. Beyond Sargasso. A gland agitating mud 200 miles inland, a scale of water on water working up estuaries, he drifted into motion halfway across the Atlantic. Sure as a satellite's insinuating pull in the ocean, as true to his orbit. Against ebb, current, rock, rapids,
a muscled icicle that melts itself longer and fatter. He buries his arrival beyond light and tidal water, investing silt and sand with a sleek root. By day, only the drain maker's spade or the mud paddler can make him abort. Dark delivers him hungering down each undulation. Bait. Lamps dawdle in the field at midnight. Three men follow their nose in the grass. The lamps beam their prow and compass. The bucket's handle better not clatter now. Silence and curious light gather bait. Nab him, but wait for the first shrinking tacky on the thumb. Let him resettle backwards in his tunnel. Then draw steady, and he'll come. Among the millions whirling their mud coronas, under dewlap leaf and bowed blades, a few are bound to be rustled in these night raids. Innocent ventilators of the ground, making the globe a perfect fit, a few are bound to be cheated of it, when lamps dawdle in the field at midnight, when fishers need a garland for the bay, and have him where he needs to come, out of the clay. Setting. A line goes out of sight and out of mind, down to a soft bottom of silt and sand, past the indifferent skill of the hunting hand. A bouquet of small hooks coiled in the stern is being paid out back to its true form until the bouquet is hidden in the worm. The boat rides forward where the line slants back. The oars in their locks go round and round. The eel describes his arcs without a sound. The gulls fly an umbrella overhead, treading air as soon as the line runs out, responsive acolytes above the boat. Not sensible of any Kyrie, the fishers, who don't know and never try, pursue the work in hand as destiny. They clear the bucket of the last chopped worms, pitching them high, good riddance, earthy char. The gulls encompass them before the water. Lifting. They're busy in a high boat that stalks towards Antrim, the power cut. The line's a filament of smut drawn hand over fist, where every 3 yards a hook's missed or taken, and the smut thickens wrist thick, a flail lashed into the barrel with one swing. Each eel comes aboard to this welcome. The hook left in gill or gum, it's slapped into the barrel numb, but knits itself 4-ply with the furling, fat, slippy haul, a knot of back and pewter belly that stays continuously won, for each catch they fling in is sucked home like lubrication. And wakes are enwound as the catch on the morning water. Which boat was which? And when did this begin? This morning? Last year, when the loch first spawned, the crews will answer once the season's in. The return. In ponds, drains, dead canals, she turns her head back, older now, following whim deliberately, till she's at sea in grass, and damned if she'll turn, so its new trenches, sunk pipes, swamps, running streams, the loch, the river. Her stomach shrunk, she exhilarates in mid-water. Its throbbing is speed through days and weeks. Who knows now if she knows her depth or direction? She's passed Malin and Torrey, silent, wakeless, a wisp, a wick that is its own taper and light through the weltering dark. Where she's lost, once she lays 10,000 feet down in her origins. The current carries slicks of orphaned spawn. Vision. Unless his hair was fine combed, the lice, they said, would gang up into a mealy rope and drag him, small, dirty, doomed, down to the water. He was cautious then in riverbank fields. Thick as a birch trunk, that cable flexed in the grass every time the wind passed. Years later in the same fields, he stood at night when eels moved through the grass like hatched fears towards the water. To stand in one place as the field flowed past a jellied road, to watch the eels crossing land, rewound his world's live girdle. Phosphorescent sinewed slime continued at his feet. Time confirmed the horrid cable.
Seamus Heaney and a Loch Ness sequence. Brilliant poem. Brilliant poet, Seamus Heaney. Widely recognised as one of the major poets of the 20th century. He was actually a native of Northern Ireland, raised in County Derry, and he lived for many years in Dublin. He was the author of over 20 volumes of poetry and criticism. He also edited several widely used anthologies, and he won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1995 for, quote, works of lyrical beauty and ethical depth which exalt everyday miracles and the living past. He also taught at Harvard University, did Seamus Heaney, from 1985 to 2006, and he served as the Oxford Professor of Poetry. I haven't even had a point yet. Oxford Professor of Poetry from 1989 to 1994. And then sadly passed away in 2013. But the privilege of meeting him once, and then I was asked to write an obit for him, and it was gloriously, I was very humbled to do so. So, Seamus Heaney. There's another anniversary as well, which I must share with you, because, would you believe it, I remember this happening. Yes, it was a few years ago. One of my first jobs was as a police cadet in the Birmingham City Police, as was, because my dad's factory had shut, so I couldn't go into Leyland or into the Slumberland factory. I won't bore you with that now. And part of the training, we went to Wales, and it was kind of like military almost. It wasn't military, but we had to do a lot of fitness training. We had to do a lot of big hikes, yonks, I suppose they called them, yomps in the army. And I, with a big heavy pack, I stupidly and perhaps prophetically took a radio with me. And so in the months of this particular year, we were walking over mountains in the Eland Valley in Wales. And this was released. And the frightening thing about this is it's glorious, you're going to love it, but it's 50 years old. How old does that make me feel? Mind you, I suppose, how old does it make Paul McCartney feel? Yes, I think they liked him. That was Paul McCartney, of course, and Wings and Band on the Run, released 50 years ago this week. Oh, it's time for me, Ovaltine. Thank you for your company. That's all we've got time for. I'll see you next time. I'm Nick Hennigan. This is Literary London on bohemianbritain.com, but chiefly on Resonance 104.4 FM.